Welcome to the Missourinet Press Pass. My name is Darren Jobe. With me today, Brent Martin, Steve Walsh, Bob Pretty. And we're going to touch on a couple of subjects near and dear to all of our hearts. And first, we're going to talk with Bob Pretty about not a moratorium on execution, but some discussions about execution and not a specific moratorium, but a study about the effects of execution and what that process has on the person who actually does the execution, I guess, the executioner. And can you tell me more about it?
Yeah, we have a proposal in the Senate that came up for debate a few days ago. And at this point in the session, the floor leader is saying we're only going to debate things for a little while. And then if you don't get a vote on them, we'll put them aside and go on to something else. And then you can come back to them later, maybe. But this is a proposal to set up a 10-member study commission, one member of which is a relative of a person under a death sentence. Another member of the commission is someone who is the relative of a murder victim. And they're going to spend some time studying the death penalty and how it is used in Missouri and what inequalities there might be in the way it is used. And Senator Kevin Engler, who's the majority floor leader in the Senate, says he'll support that study committee. He won't support doing away with the death penalty. He won't support a moratorium on the death penalty. But he'll support the study of it because the prison where the executions are carried out is in his town, or in his district, far from his town, in Bonterre. He's from Farmington. And he has people that he knows that actually carry out these executions. He says the problem comes when you're working in the prison and you're around these folks a lot for a long period of time, and you get to know them, and then you're the one who has to, one way or another, push the button. And so he says these folks just want to know definitely that these people deserve what they're getting and that there's not a mistake in the system. So he says that's why he would support the study.
I would imagine.
Now it's stalled because they ran out of time the first time. And who knows when they'll get back to it.
But I would imagine a lot of times by the time that the death penalty is actually carried out, the individual that you're executing is a significantly different person than they were 10 years, 15 years, 20 years prior to when they actually committed the crime. It seems like, generally speaking, whenever someone's executed, it's many, many years after they were found guilty of
almost always 10, not 14.
Yeah, pretty close. Are they different people? Well, they say they're different people.
Right.
And undoubtedly, since they haven't been on the streets, since they haven't been in a situation where this can happen again, since they've been in a place where there is a lot of counseling, and they've probably formed a relationship with a spiritual advisor, is the phrase that the corrections department uses. Probably they have undergone some changes. I mean, I've seen a couple of the people that I've watched be executed had a Bible or a Quran on their chest at the time they were executed, some things like that. So, but there have been a two or three, and I think these guys have probably covered some where the people went into that chamber pretty much unrepentant.
That's a good way of putting it.
And angry.
I mean, one of them said, I wish somebody would kill my lawyer or something, right?
Yeah, somebody needs to kill my trial attorney.
Yeah.
Which was not what you expect as one's final thoughts on this earth.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, those were his final thoughts.
Not all of them undergo great changes, but some of them, I guess, probably do.
We're late in the session. There's lots of things kind of coming. And like you said, Bob, if there's not time, then it just gets tabled or put to the side. Mm-hmm. Steve, you've been covering and watching this economic development bill that's in the Senate that keeps spinning around. This happens every year, right?
Yeah, this is something, by the way, this passed in February in the House. And then the House version got out of committee. Now, this is the House version, which is not going anywhere. We can say that right now. It's not an opinion. I mean,
let's not hurt anybody's feelings.
It's not going anywhere.
It's not going
Nevertheless, it was passed out of committee last Thursday. So the Senate is working on its own version, which started out as quality jobs, and now it's been loaded up with everything else, a lot of tax credits. There is some concern, and that seems to be the big issue.
Is this what we called QIP earlier?
No.
QIP deals with Ameren.
Different thing altogether. I'm sorry.
But that's okay. They're both controversial.
Quips and tiffs.
Quality jobs. Now, we know the brief quality jobs thing is we provide, we the state would provide tax breaks, tax credits for a company which comes in and creates quality jobs, good paying jobs with health benefits, that kind of thing. And the idea is you do that, it's a quid pro quo, right? Mm-hmm. You take care of us, we'll take care of you, and everyone's happy, and we move on. But that doesn't always happen. And the argument among some people, Jason Crowell, the senator from Cape Girardeau, is that we spend too much in tax credits, and there's only so much of the pie. And if we're giving away so much in tax credits, we're not getting back. The state is not getting the revenues that it needs.
And I'm sure an argument could be made that if you gave them a 10-year tax credit or relief from credit for a significant period of time, they could come do their business. And they'd make plans to go on to the next.
And that could happen right now. One of the arguments is Monsanto.
I'm sure there would be. It'd be written so that.
Well, that's one of Matt Bartle's big arguments. Is we're just in a TIF war with all of our other surrounding states. Mm-hmm. We decide we'll give you X million dollars. We'll give away tax increment financing for this, and a competing state says, "Well, we'll see you that and raise you $10 million." And the next thing you know, we're in basically a bidding war. And what happens is it just basically undermines the tax base of the state. And cuts the income the state needs for programs, services, and institutions.
And the argument, of course, is from the supporters of this, if you can come across and we can give you X amount of dollars in tax credits, you're going to use those and you're going to create jobs. If you're going to create high-paying jobs and those people will be paying taxes, income taxes and so on to the system, then it's going to even out. In fact, it will be better at the end of the day. That's yet to be seen, though. So the argument is you've got people who are, as Bob has pointed out, are saying, you know, we need revenues to run the state. And if we're giving away tax credits to everybody, where's the revenue?
Right. But a lot of companies are structured in such a way so that they have no corporate tax liability. Only the individuals who work at the company have.
Right. But they can come up with all kinds of there really are a lot of tax breaks that can be given there for property taxes.
Sure.
TIFs are we're not even going to get into the TIFs, but there are all kinds of breaks that can be given to companies, and sometimes it does pay off. Sometimes getting a break here, we've brought up the Kansas Speedway situation before.
Right.
That speedway could have been built on this side of the line had there been a tax credit. But Kansas offered the tax credit. And that area of Kansas, well, I guess it's not exactly Kansas City. It's Johnson County, if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. in Kansas.
No, I don't think it's Johnson County.
Just north of
probably
Johnson County.
Greater Wyandotte County.
It's doing very well. It's an area that there was nothing there, and now it's building
now
up.
Now there's plenty there.
So the argument is, and that's the argument that proponents of the system will say, well, look what's happened over there, and it could have happened here. I don't know. I just know I can listen to both sides and say,
absolutely.
Oh, maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong.
Who can jump in their time machine and rewind and do it a different way? It's impossible to know for sure, but that's why they argue it out.
And they will continue, and they will come. I'm sure they will come up with something. A week ago, we would have said no. John Griesheimer, the senator from Washington, said middle of last week, he was very pessimistic. The end of last week, I spoke to him, and he said, I'm more optimistic now. I think people are coming around. They know we have to get something, at least get it out of the Senate, and then get together with the House and Senate Conference Committee to iron out the differences and see if they can come up with something this year.
I think they're setting up a very big clash between the House and the Senate. That'll probably be the thing to watch in the next few weeks, and especially since House Speaker Ron Richard used to be the economic development man in the House. He's very interested in this bill, and he does not like many of the changes the Senate has made, and there's going to be a real clash between the two chambers on this. And, you know, this is one that the governor wanted, Governor Nixon wanted by break. It wasn't, obviously, that wasn't going to happen, and now it's going to come down to the end of the session before it gets done.
And you, both of you guys are going to continue to be watching your respective chambers.
It's a huge bill this session.
Probably one of the signature ones.
I would think it's probably the bill.
Yeah. Probably is. I can't think of anything bigger right now.
I'm going to read.
I mean, you have the budget bills, which we go through every year, but I mean, once you get beyond that.
But
you kind of have
SB
to do the budget.
That you have to do. It's not an option. You can't put it off till next year.
Well, let's switch gears. Brent, you talked to Sister Berta Saylor.
Well, I guess probably that story, the one on state child care assistance, faulted at a Senate hearing. I think that's a classic example of very good audio driving a story. I don't think that bill's going to go anywhere, although it did pass out of committee and it's on the calendar, but I just don't think there's any sentiment for increasing the child care assistance. But the testimony given in that Senate hearing by Sister Berta was I thought, compelling and really drove the story. She made some incredible points in a very decisive way. I think the final one on in that one, the audio is better. The audio version is better than reading it. If you hear her talk about the fact that if a young single mother gets married, she will lose.
She effectively loses.
She will lose health insurance. She will state paid for health insurance and state child care.
Mm-hmm.
If she lives with Bill Gates, she loses nothing. That was incredible a cut that she had. So that was one that I thought deserved attention as a story, but I would not say it's going to be a bill that. I mean, sometimes we do that. We hear we're at a hearing. We hear compelling testimony. We still are in the radio business, and it's audio driven. And I thought it was worth it to put that on there.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it points out though that we don't just cover the bills that are going to pass. Sometimes we cover issues.
Mm-hmm.
And the issues sometimes are more important than the process that's going on around them. And
absolutely.
Sometimes there's a lot of times, and we'll report on an issue that we think the people of Missouri need to know about that is more important than the process that the issue is going through at the Capitol. And there's some times when we report on issues because the public needs to know about them so the public can react to their legislators or to their state leaders if the public wants to do that.
Right.
But simply getting the issue out there in front of the public is one of the roles that the media has. It's not just a matter of reporting on this bill is doing this and this bill is doing that, but here's an issue that affects real people that you might know who live in your neighborhood or certainly live in your town.
Right.
Somebody who works in a fast food restaurant who's getting child care and some other state benefits, if they get a 25 cent, 50 cent, dollar an hour raise, they suddenly now can't get a lot of these benefits. So, they're still not making enough money where they can buy them themselves.
Right.
What's the incentive? What's the disincentive? And I think that is something to say. So that's why I did that. I mean, I don't.
We had that argument, I believe, in the early 1960s, and the Great Society came out of it.
Yeah, the unintended consequences.
The benefits, so, it turned out that you broke up families and so on. And as Brent points out, it was kind of interesting that if you live with Bill Gates, you get your benefits. If you get married to some guy, you lose them.
Yeah.
Bill
and
Smith.
That's why we ended up the number of married families. I'm not going to get into the Great Society here, but I mean, we know how wonderful that turned out to be.
Et cetera, et cetera. It has spiked.
The doctrine of unintended consequences.
That's right.
So anyway.
Circle back around, speaking of issues that Missourians are probably need to be continuously aware of. I think in Iowa, they're looking at not necessarily changing their constitution to allow gay marriage or some sort of civil union process, but effectively that may affect Missourians. How?
Well, the Iowa Supreme Court last week threw out Iowa's ban on gay marriage. The difference, I think, in Iowa, and as I understand it, Iowa has a law. Missouri has a constitutional amendment that we adopted in 2004,
Yes, 2004.
And we adopted it by a huge majority.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, the Iowa law against gay marriage has been thrown out by the courts. Well, that means that gay couples in Missouri might want to go up to Iowa and get married if they wish, but they're still not going to be recognized as a married couple here because of our constitutional amendment. So the question is, what does it get them? Well,
right.
it gets them the satisfaction of being married, if they want to call that that. Next question is, if this situation in Iowa is likely to stand, and I suspect that probably there's going to be a very quickly formed movement in Iowa, as there was in Missouri, to pass an amendment to the Constitution up there that makes it harder to overturn a law. So therefore, we have the constitutional change, then this might not be there very long in Iowa. But nonetheless, a lot of people can go up to Iowa if they want to get married in Iowa. They come back down here. There will be a growing number of folks then in Missouri who are married in the eyes of one state, not recognized by another state. Now you raise some federal constitutional questions about
equal protection.
Okay. Yeah, among other things. And so then that might set up some kind of a challenge to Missouri's constitutional amendment at the federal level. And so the more we have this situation where this is readily available now just across the border to the north, the more we could set the stage perhaps for some challenges in Missouri to the law that Missourians adopted. The amendment.
Prince Steve, weigh in at all?
No? I think it would be interesting if indeed we did have, as Bob points out, if this thing got to the federal level, it would certainly be interesting to follow. Whichever side of the issue you happen to be on, I think Missourians would certainly find it very interesting to follow that.
Yeah, a federal constitutional challenge.
Oh, absolutely. That would be a fascinating story to cover.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court ruling on our own constitutionality.
And this is one of those issues, anytime you have something like this, it's always easy to try to oversimplify it to play to the public mood or the public emotion. But the fact is, this is a legal issue, and it is an issue of constitutional rights in the eyes of many people. And, yeah, the fact that the Missourians voted, 75% or 80% in favor?
Yeah, 75%.
Very high. The fact that they adopted this does not make it immune to a constitutional challenge. The fact that the Missouri legislature passes a law or the people enact a law that are bad laws and are ultimately unable to withstand the legal arguments of the constitutional challenge, the Constitution prevails over a public vote.
Right.
Well, but ours is a constitutional amendment.
But that's why. Why it would have to be a federal thing instead of just a state challenge.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the big
issue
with all the others that are that are going on.
Who wins the game tonight?
Gee, I guess Missourians were kind of pulling for old TH there with North Carolina.
Yeah, we got to pull for the Tar Heels.
And it's a Learfield school.
Learfield school. We do business with the University of North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. I'm sick of North Carolina.
I love them. They're great.
Well, we've got a Missouri boy who's the big star, don't
exactly.
we?
Exactly.
That's right. That's what I said, TH.
We got to be rooting for him.
Yep. Got to be rooting for him.
Don't have to.
You have to.
No, you don't.
I'll just recruit people to root.
I don't know. I don't even.
Except
know
nobody from Learfield's going to listen to this.
That spread covers the Spartans.
I'll be in trouble.
I don't even know if I'm going
to
watch it.
Oh, it hurts my heart.
Well, it'll start so late because it has to be. You know, they want it between 8 and 11 East Coast time, and they want part of that between 8 and 11 West Coast time. So it's got to start around 9 o'clock our time.
We're all going to be dragging in. Well, some of us will be dragging in, staying up until midnight.
I'm going to bed at 10 o'clock, no matter what.
Thank you for your time.
I'll be asleep before then, probably.
I'll give you an email if and when with the results.
Call me in the morning.
Absolutely. You've been listening to the Missourinet Press Pass. For Bob, Steve, and Brent, I'm Darren Jobe. Have a good day.